This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The book we're talking about today, It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. And we've been talking to the author, Mark Wolin, who is a leading expert on inherited family trauma. And in part one, we sort of laid the groundwork for our discussion by describing the many ways in which there is a transgenerational passage of messages that may relate to trauma, to starvation, to various forms of stress that can be transmitted to future generations that have implications for how people react in a setting where some of these symptoms seem inexplicable. So let's take the discussion forward, Mark, because you work with these patients frequently. What are some of the techniques that you utilize to break the cycle of inherited family trauma?
The first thing I want to hear is to make the link so that we know that we have a trauma that has been, in fact, transmitted. And I'm listening to something I call core language. So when a trauma happens, clues are left behind, and, you know, clues in the form of emotionally charged words and sentences, clues that I find form a breadcrumb trail that when we learn how to follow it can lead us back to these traumas in our family history, traumas that we may have biologically inherited or inherited the residues from our parents and grandparents. And we know how to uncover these unconscious words and link them to the original trauma, then we're on the path. It's like finding that missing piece of the puzzle that lets the whole picture come into view and gives us a context that explains why we feel the way we feel. So in the book, I'll teach the reader to become a detective, to listen for as many questions, for the reader to uncover these clues themselves and to link them. This trauma language, for example, I might ask the reader to tell me his or her worst fear, that if something, to the listener right now, if things suddenly fell apart, if things went terribly wrong, what's your worst fear? What's the worst thing that could happen to you? The answer to this question often can guide us to look at the traumas that we may have inherited or that occurred in our childhood. And depending on the type of, I differentiate between two types of answers, some that lead to traumas that originated in our family history and some that originated early in our life. Now, what do we do? Once we've made the link, once we know that we're walking around with a trauma that's not ours, but we have the trauma symptoms, we've got to have an experience that's powerful enough, Ron, to override the old trauma response that lives inside so many of us. You know, when we look at the way our brains are designed, in an evolutionary sense, our brains are designed with a negativity bias that tips us over for learning from what's difficult or negative or what will keep us safe versus the positive that what will help us heal. So we have these brains, they say that two-thirds of the amygdala, it's scanning for threats.
Mm-hmm. It's the fear center of the brain, basically.
Fear center, the limbic system, the mammalian brain, reptilian brain, this part of the brain that keeps this trauma brain, this trauma response charged in so many of us. So what do? We're walking around with either our trauma or a family trauma, an inherited family trauma, and we've got a brain designed to keep it intact, keep it ingrained. We've got to have a new experience, powerful enough that can override this trauma response. And then we've got to practice the new feelings and the new sensations of this experience. So what I teach people is how to have a new experience of, it can be even receiving comfort from our parents when there was no comfort given. In fact, one of the things I tackle in my book, which is one of the biggies, is that a lot of us have difficulty with our parents. And in the rejecting of our parents, we've either rejected aspects of ourselves we can't see when we're the same, or we can't, you know, we've disowned that behavior in ourselves. For example, if our parent is critical, we can't see when we're critical. And then it expresses in us unconsciously. Or we bring in a partner. We pull in a partner, a spouse who's critical. Or by our hypervigilance, because we expect them to be critical, they become critical.
Right.
Yeah. Or thirdly,
we become
self-critical.
We reproduce the template, so to speak.
You got it. Yeah. A perfect way to say it.
Yeah.
We've got a blueprint, and that blueprint just continues.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing that happens when you have difficulty with a parent, if that parent is aggressive, we're inwardly aggressive. If that parent's critical, we're self-critical. So what I try to tackle in this book is how to receive something from our parents, even when very little was given.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll teach the reader how to receive, well, to look back, of course, in the family history and to see, well, of course, your parent was critical. Look what happened. We do the family tree in the book. We do the genogram. And we see all the things that blocked the flow of support, blocked the flow of love. So in the book, I'll teach people how to have this a new experience of receiving comfort or support, maybe from the parents, maybe from the grandparents, maybe from ourselves, or to develop a feeling of compassion or gratitude even, or generosity toward ourselves, or compassion toward the parent. Oh, Mom, now I see. Of course, if you were given away, how could you be anything but critical?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I teach the reader how to have an experience that allows us to feel strength or peace inside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this new experience is important because once we're feeling this newfound strength or this newfound support or this newfound comfort or peace inside, we've got to practice it because, remember, our brain is designed toward the negative. So we've got to re-experience as much positive experiences as we can. So that can be even sitting in mindfulness, which we know affects gene expression, sitting in meditation, being creative, journaling, art, but any other experience where we can allow ourselves to feel that curiosity and wonder or have that experience be meaningful to us, positive, rewarding, salient. Here's the idea. We've got to steal traction away from our highly efficient brain, that trauma cycle that keeps us in a state of suffering. And then we've got to engage other areas of the brain, specifically the prefrontal cortex, where we can integrate the new experience, the new sensations, the new feelings, and we can have a new experience. And then our brains can change. You talked about plastic change a while back. So we can have plastic change in our brains, neuroplasticity. So basically, when we revisit these feelings of comfort or support or compassion or generosity or gratitude or loving kindness, and we revisit the feelings and sensations that are associated with this new experience, not only do the structures in our brain begin to wire differently, or they wire together. If we go back to Hebb's law, what fires together wires together. Not only do our neural structures begin to have neuroplastic change, where the dendrites of the one experience, the one structure, start to move into the other, and they wire in a similar way, but we can also stimulate the release of feel-good neurotransmitters like GABA, serotonin, dopamine, or feel-good hormones like oxytocin. And the main thing, and there's studies now out, in fact, that let me state it. The main thing is our genes can be affected, or the way the genes are, the way our genes express can be affected. The very genes involved with our body's stress response can begin to function in a new and an improved way. There's lots of studies right now that those people that I mentioned, Elizabeth Malsui at the Zurich Brain Institute, the University of Zurich, they've discovered if our outer situation becomes positive, that it can affect the gene expression. There's a great study out of Wisconsin about mindfulness meditation that 8 hours of mindfulness affected gene expression.
So
you know, the main thing is practicing these new experiences so they become installed in our body, and that's how we create neuroplastic change in our brain. We deepen the experience. Well, we even ask questions as we're practicing. I love to tell people to say, okay, you're having this new experience, and you're waking up this morning, and you're going to practice it. You're going to sleep, you're practicing it. Ask yourself, what's the new thing I'm noticing right now in my body? What's the sensation inside? And if I just stay with this new sensation of this compassion, or this feeling of peace, or this feeling of comfort, what eventually happens? What's happening right now?
So you can take a bad neural circuit, because this is all, you know, in neurochemistry, there's sort of a neural circuit of, you know, different parts of the brain lighting up. And these pathways tend to be negatively reinforced. It's a vicious cycle. Much as in some cases pain is negatively reinforced, it just perpetuated. It's almost like a spiral. You can actually break the vicious cycle, and you can begin to create a helpful upward spiral of emotion and perception that may replace the previous brain circuit. I guess that's what you're trying to articulate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we brush our teeth 2-3 times a day because it's a habit. But is it a habit to have a positive experience? No. Mm-hmm. We have to form these habits. So just like brushing our teeth, there's a man named Rick Hansen, does some great brain work, who talks about 6 times a day, 30 seconds, practice 6 times a day for 30 seconds, for 1 minute, mm-hmm. and we can affect brain change. He has this great model called HEAL, which I like this model. It's heal. Have the new experience. Then ingrain the new experience with the E. Ingrain or enrich it. What I would say, install it in your body. Mm. Get it to sink into your body. Then he has absorb, which is the sinking, the installing, this ingraining, this absorbing. And the L, which is the first thing I do, which is link it, to have people link this trauma experience, this trauma language, these words that we spout whenever we're fearful, whenever we talk about our complaints. You know, I have another tool in the book called The Core Complaint, another book in the tool in the book called The Core Descriptors. When we can identify this core complaint, when we can identify these core descriptors, when we can identify this core sentence, which is that answer to what's your worst fear, then comes the linking, where we can link this. Wait a minute. I've seen this before. This isn't even my trauma. My dad carried this. His dad carried this. Oh, my goodness. His dad had this experience. No wonder. Here's where the whole thing started.
So, in other words, it's maladaptive equipment that we may have inherited that may not be applicable to our current circumstances. And maybe just that realization can help us transcend the reflexive emotional responses that that circuitry generates.
The realization is number one. The practice is number two. Absolutely. Sometimes the realization alone, Ron, is enough. Mm. Sometimes people, when they just make the link, they'll go, that's it. And boom, they start having an unconscious unwinding in the body, because it's almost as though that realization is enough. But other times, we've got to heal that trauma brain, that trauma response, that brain that's designed to keep us, nope, stay guarded, nope, don't trust, nope, stay on edge, right? So we've got to get into that brain and start to, rather than have our limbic brain be the controller of our experience, we've got to get more brain experience into the other parts of our brain, like the prefrontal cortex, where we can have these positive experiences start to unfurl and yield fruit, yield neuroplasticity.
Well, you know, these insights should have a profound impact on the field of psychiatry and psychology. Are you getting out there and preaching the gospel to your colleagues to try and get them to maybe realize that there's another dimension to patient care than, you know, so the more superficial dimensions that, you know, we tend to work with in our regular practice of psychology and psychiatry?
Absolutely. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is to provide help for people who struggle with these effects and don't have a clue where to turn or don't have a clue what's causing it. But also, I wrote this book, just as you say, to generate awareness in the medical and therapeutic community about the impact of epigenetics so this field can grow and practices like these can become standard and clinicians can have the tools they need to work with inherited family trauma. Because many of us are walking around with a mystery that we can't explain. We were walking around with unexplained fears and sudden onset anxieties and depressions that we never get to the bottom of, obsessive thoughts, phobias that didn't belong with us. I could tell so many cases. In fact, if we have time, I'd love to tell the very first case I worked with that really clued me in to look in this direction, but I don't know how much time we have here.
No, please share. Yeah, provide at least one tangible example of how this is working.
Yeah, so I work with this woman who's a cutter, and the first thing I notice is the way that she, and she's 24.
In other words, self-inflicted.
She's a self-injure. She's cutting with a razor blade into her leg, her arm, and her abdomen. But there's something peculiar about the way that she's cutting. She's cutting in a way where she cuts so deeply, she'll hit artery, vessel, vein, something deep enough where she'll start to bleed almost to death and have to be rushed to a hospital. So our mom and her
Which is atypical because many cutters,
This is the first thing I'm noticing. Let's call her Sarah for the sake of the story. Why is Sarah cutting so deeply? Mm-hmm. Then the second thing I ask Sarah, tell me, what is it that you're thinking or feeling right as you're holding that razor blade to your arm? And she said, listen to this, 24-year-old woman said to me, I deserve to die? And I said, what did you do? Did you cause an accident? Did you hurt somebody? Did you kill somebody? Did you leave somebody and they committed suicide? She said, no, nothing like that. I said, do you have any idea where that comes from, that feeling? No. So what I did is the smart thing, right? I looked in her childhood. Not there. I looked at her parents. Not there. This was back in the early times before I knew what I was looking for. This is 20-some years ago. She had a great relationship with her mom. Great relationship with her dad. Beautiful, secure attachment in utero, post-utero, with her mother. So I said, wow, well, let's go further. Tell me about your grandmother. And boom, I'm sorry, your grandparents. And boom, she drops the bomb. My grandmother was an alcoholic. She was driving the car drunk. My grandfather was in the front seat, passenger seat. She hit a pole. My grandmother lived. But my grandpa went through the window, got cut on the glass, and bled to death before the ambulance came. And my grandmother felt that she was guilty. What did we learn? Two things.
Like very Old Testament, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, death by exsanguination is the verdict, right?
She she learned it was not her feeling that I deserve to die. Grandma was the one that would have felt,
right,
I deserve to die, as you're saying, from taking my beloved's life, taking anyone's life. And then in that moment, Sarah understood. When I cut myself, well, we worked with this. I'll tell you what I did with her too. When I cut myself, I am remembering this trauma that my dad will never mention because dad was only 12.
Hmm.
But I knew about it because my mom told me. Sarah, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm also feeling like my grandmother, which isn't my feeling. Just the awareness alone got the ball rolling. Now comes the work. Now we need an experience. So I have Sarah in my chair, and I have her, I put a two pair of foam rubber footprints, which is what I often use when I'm working with people, for the family members that are gone, deceased, not here, not in the session.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, I have Sarah. Sarah, just tell the truth. Tell your grandmother that you carry this feeling that you deserve to die and you cut. And she goes, Grandma, because both her grandma's gone and her grandpa's gone.
Hmm.
Grandma, I have this feeling I deserve to die. And Grandpa, I cut and I almost bleed out like you. And so as I'm working with Sarah, I'm going, that feeling back there, and here you are up here with this feeling two generations later. So I had Sarah work with her breathing out where she felt this feeling in her body, and envisioning her grandmom saying, hey, breathe that back to me. It was never yours in the first place. And her grandpa saying, hey, I'm here supporting you. And her grandma saying, hey, I'm here supporting you. And in that session, Sarah had this visceral experience, which every time she felt the impulse to self-injure, she would feel her grandmother behind her supporting her, feel her grandpa behind her supporting her, feel them as a positive energy, a positive support, and it palliated the need to hurt herself.
Wow, that's profound. Well, examples like these abound in the book. It didn't start with you. So, Mark Willen, what's today's intelligent medicine call to action besides getting your book? Do you have a website, or you have a private practice, but you're located in San Francisco, correct?
I do. There's Mark Willen Facebook, and then there's my website, markwillen.com, WOLYNN. But if I have a minute, do I have a minute to leave people with a tip or two?
Please.
Yeah, there's a couple insights I'd like to have leap with people. If we or one of our family members are struggling with depression or something we can't explain, anxiety, phobia, OCD, we really do have to shake the family tree and see what falls out. We really do. You know, what family secrets have been hidden, or what stories don't get told, what traumas have never healed all the way. It's important to know these things, especially if we or our children are struggling with symptoms. I found that when we ignore the past, it can come back to haunt us. But when we explore it, Ron, we don't always have to repeat it. We can break the patterns. Secondly, I like people to know that please talk about these traumas in your family and try to work through them so they're not passed down. The more we can heal our own stuff, the more, and talk about this stuff, the more we can bring relief to our children who may have no clue that they're suffering and they don't know why. We need to identify the trauma language in ourselves. We've got to make these links. We've got to do this work in ourselves so we can break the cycle and heal. And the third thing, the last thing, and I can't harp on this enough, we need to heal the brain's super efficient trauma response that keeps us stuck in suffering. We need to practice. I lay these, the whole third, the last third of my book is designed with practices that people can practice so they can heal the brain. Again, my website, Mark Willen, WOLYNN.com.
I'll repeat that. It's Mark with a K, WOLYNN.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us here, and thank you for such an empowering message. I think your work spells the potential for breakthrough for innumerable patients out there who may feel stuck, hopeless, disempowered, in the face of inexplicable stresses that may have their origin far beyond what they feel is their ordinary lifetime experience. And I think that that's an important message to share. Appreciate very much you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our talk.
I do too. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.